What is up, guys? I am Caleb Giddings, and I am here with my co-host.
Steve Finch, I found him,
And
guys.
we're still alive. And we're here, I promise. I have been unbelievably busy. You know, as some of you guys may or may not know, I'm currently in pre-deployment training for the Air Force. I'm also still working full-time for Taurus. So, you
Don't
know,
let him
my
lie to you guys. He was off planet. The Stargate program is real.
Wouldn't that be? Where's my P90? Where's my P90? That's all I want. Like the Stargate TV show is one of very few. It's one of very few pieces of Air Force-centric fiction that exists, period.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun.
It is.
It's so much fun.
We basically have in so I mean the Army's got a million movies, the Navy's got a million movies. That fuck the Navy for a minute. They've got movies about about ground warfare. They got movies about air warfare. They got movies about boat warfare. The fucking Navy's got all the movies, right?
They
Fucking
do.
now, the only thing that I will say that is, you know, an advantage for the Air Force is we claim the Transformer movies. The first few ones, we claim the Transformers movies because good Lord, does Michael Bay show all of the air power in
Oh God,
those.
yeah. Now, but who gets hot shots? That's the real question.
I think we can all sort of collectively take Hot Shots as
Right,
movie.
especially the franchise, because Hot Shots 2 definitely divulges into diverges
Hot
into
Shots, that's such a weird era of movies. Like those parodying, you know, the genre of parody movies that are clearly inspired by a specific movie but are also lampooning an entire genre. What the in what like I think the last one of those that was released in theaters, like, and the one that killed the genre was Meet the Spartans.
Yeah. I
Which
the paint on abs and Meet the Spartans was very funny. I did like it.
but that was a but th like think about like
It was so on the nose because it was still trying to do like the scary movie vein and everything like that. And those were all continuations of the classic era, like the Mel Brooks era, where you had Spaceballs and
Well, because yeah, I mean, if you really go back, hey guys, this episode is about movies, apparently. It is kind of a grab bag. We didn't really have a specific topic, but with my schedule, we want to try to
don't
get
worry, by our ADHD powers, we will have stuff to entertain you guys.
we want to try to get at least one of these in the can per month, just so that, you know, you guys, you know, don't forget that we exist. We must feed the free ice cream machine. But no, like, because if you look back, like, really the best examples of that specific parody genre are the originals, right? Spaceballs, Blazing Saddles, and then even later on, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, right? Those are without a doubt the gold standard of that sort of we are parodying a specific movie, but also an entire genre of movies. A couple other ones that, you know, are get honorable mention were the Not Another Teen Movie parody, which was the first one was funny. It was very witty. And it very accurately lampooned also a very specific genre of movies, the 90s teen movie, which as a 90s teen, I saw all of those movies, all of them. Oh, '90s
What
teen
a
movie genre.
time. We need, unfortunately, I don't think the creative strength is there in the studios right now. They have franchised and then just crushed themselves into little boxes. But I think the independent studios could revive a good parody era for us in the not too distant future, as long as they have the gall to do it a little bit. So a lot of who you would have to take on are like Marvel Studios and Disney and, you know,
Right,
Star
like,
Wars,
yeah, and like to do a, and
Lucasfilm.
that's kind of the problem, right? Is, you know, back when Mel Brooks did Spaceballs, you know, obviously Star Wars was a hugely successful franchise at that point, but Lucasfilm wasn't going to sue him because people still had a sense of humor back
Yeah.
then. You
George
know?
blessed the movies,
Yeah.
right? George
George Lucas was
loves
like, this shit's
the
funny.
concept of Spaceballs. He's like, parody? Like, the ultimate form of flattery is parody, by all means. On top of that, you're hilarious, Mel Brooks. Go.
And I feel like if you tried to do a parody movie in today's environment and you did like not another superhero movie parody, it would be, you'd end up getting sued. Or, well, actually, you know, you could make the argument that TV shows like The Boys exist as not a parody because it isn't, it's not that, but as a darker, as a reflection of that superhero movie culture. And I also am deeply amused. My favorite joke about both The Boys and Invincible and the fact that they're on Amazon Prime is that how come the billionaire that looks the most like Lex Luthor has two shows on his network where the central premise is, what if Superman was a dick?
Another show, shout out to Seth MacFarlane on this one. Another show that did parody really well, but like very respectfully, was The Orville.
Honestly, the Orville was a better Star Trek show than some Star Trek shows.
Yeah,
Like they
it is
did.
arguably one of the best Star Trek shows we have right now. And I think that was kind of his little switcheroo, kind of how like the Marine Corps absolutely did not buy the M27 as a service rifle. It was totally a supplement, guys. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Seth MacFarlane didn't make a Star Trek show. He wanted to make a Star Trek show, but he couldn't. So he didn't make a Star Trek show. He made a parody of a Star Trek show that just happened to be like a really good Star Trek show.
He actually asked to, well, and the fun
Oh, he
backstory about
did.
the Orville is he actually went to, I think it was whoever owned CBS and was like, can I do a Star Trek? And they were like, you do jokes, jokey man. So the answer is no. And he was like, fine, I'll make my own Star Trek with blackjack and hookers. And he did pretty much that exactly. I felt like the
Much.
Orville went off the rails a little bit there at the end, like a lot of shows do, though. It's hard
Yeah.
to. It's hard when your bit is kind of specific to keep making content that is both, you know, relevant to that bit and you know, and also still engaging. Speaking of shows that got canceled, and so we're gonna talk about Firefly here for a minute,
As we should.
because Jules
Alex and I
Stewart.
addressed a little bit of Firefly the other episode because we were talking about our favorite science fiction small arms.
Ah,
And of
yes.
course, Malcolm Reynolds and his sidearm came up because the
Because
thing's
it's
a
a
whole fly.
Taurus.
We are also here to officially petition, and by petition, I mean we will hold you upside down and drag you into Brett's office and be like, we're making Firefly guns now.
I mean, I bet you we could make Captain Mal's gun,
Oh yeah.
because it's a, it's just a Taurus 85 inside a cosmetic shell.
Exactly.
So, you know, we could probably just do, I'd probably start with a medium frame instead and do the octa, the hardest part, honestly, the hardest part to machine would be the octagonal barrel. Do you have any idea how expensive? So we make a couple of guns with octagonal barrels, and when I found out how much more it costs to make an octagonal barrel versus a just a round barrel, I like my chest hurt for a minute. I was like, why so much money? And then, you know, they took me aside like I was a small child and was like, because many more machining processes. And I was
Many, much more machine.
like much, much
I bet
more.
we could easily get Zoe's too, because it's a lever gun.
I mean, we basically make Zoe's gun right now.
Yeah.
It's a, because I think hers is a, I want to see, and I would have to look to see if it's a side eject or a top eject.
It
Because,
looks like it's a top eject here.
oh, if it's a top eject, yeah, we make that. We have the fucking ranch hands over on Heritage right now. Like we have the
Yeah, it's
ranch
a top
hand.
eject.
Yeah, oh, yeah, ranch hand 44 Magnum, boom, done. Put a sling and a weird little
Awesome.
dinghy on it, and we're good to go.
Vera's gonna be
What was
the
Vera?
hard
What was the prop gun for Vera?
one. Vera's prop, like, I don't even know if, let's see.
IMFDB.org. Please don't give me a virus. IMFDB.org. All right, we just searched for, no, not Brandon Vera, not Vera Farmiga. I mean, I'll look at Vera Farmiga. Hang on.
Yeah.
Fucking Firefly. You know, one of the, my least favorite things about the Serenity movie was
Oh,
that.
this is doable, but I forgot, the base gun is definitely a Kalashnikov shotgun
Well, that makes
or something
sense.
similar.
All right, hang on. Other non-firing fake weapons. Ah, the Lassiter pistol. I feel like that had to be a reference to something, like the name Lassiter, right? Oh man, we could do well, because I forgot Jane's got a Lamat.
Yep.
That's
But
easy enough.
like Firefly continued kind of the tradition that Star Wars started of taking and dressing up some older style firearms into sci-fi guns.
I remember I was like, it's like the third episode, the fifth episode, Safe, where they have the gunfight and it's all like Colt official police and other revolvers, and except they're all going pew pew and making laser noise sounds. And I'm like, that's just so weird to me. Like, my brain really had a hard time parsing that. All right, here we go.
You do
Callahan
like
Full
that
Bore
sometimes.
Autoblock Vera. So it is a modified Ismash Saiga 12. I can so when you look at the still photos of it, you can see that it's basically just a Saiga with a bunch of weird shit bolted on it.
Yeah. In classic sci-fi tropism.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, it's funny. I think the last movie or the last major sci-fi property that I saw that really engaged in any of that, like using real guns as props, is
Was it Battlestar?
no, Rogue One.
Rogue One. Rogue One did that well.
Rogue
I think
One, they had
Mandalorian had a little
AR-15s.
bit of it, but I think a lot more of the Mandalorian guns were full props and not just dressed up.
Well, Rogue One, they had AR-15s, and then there was a shift sort of with the advent of better CGI, better After Effects, you know, that you see in stuff like, when you see it in stuff like John Wick, right? Where, you know, the muzzle flash and everything, the gun cycling is either airsoft or CGI. And that eliminates a level of risk into that comes with the movie gun thing, you know, and like not to bring up the Alec Baldwin thing, but that whole instance, there's a lot in that as well. Like, with it, we could actually do a whole episode unpacking every procedural failure that went wrong during that. And there's multiple safety errors, like multiple safety crimes that were committed that led to that specific moment. But the whole move away from real guns dressed up as space guns, you know, it helps eliminate a level of risk for that, right? Like, you're not
If
running.
you're using a non-firing whatever or a completely inert, green gas, whatever you want to do, if you're using something that cannot chamber real rounds, you eliminate a lot of risk on set.
And
And if
also,
you're
I think,
working in
especially.
sci-fi anyway, and you're going to be, rotoscoping in lasers, not that rotoscope is used anymore at all, but if you're going to be doing those After Effects, there is a giant part of it that's like, look, we don't have to take the risk. There's no reason to take the risk. Let's not.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and one too, you know, for like sci-fi especially, I don't have a problem with, you know, them using not guns, right? Because if, and to backtrack that a little bit, that also depends on how sort of grounded the sci-fi is, you know? Like, if we're talking about like a science fiction universe that is set 100 years in Earth's future, and all of a sudden they're using laser guns and a bunch of other stuff, I'm gonna be like, hold on. We still have 100-year-old guns running around right now. Like, we would
Like
definitely still have, you
a
know.
franchise that I think did that pretty well, even though we discussed that they picked the wrong gun to do it, was the Tomorrow War. Right? That was like 50 years in the future,
Oh my
but they
God,
had
I
like
had completely
unlimited
forgotten about
bullet
that
little
movie.
AR-15 submachine guns that never, like very rarely, I think they reloaded like four times in the movie.
Right. No, and because that was the one where they had the 7-inch AR with a fixed full
Yeah,
length stock.
and then the Hera like furniture on it. What
And
have you it's like,
done?
okay, those looked neat and you could kind of give them a reason, but instead it's like, oh, well, we chambered these in 4.6 by 30 because H and K, bro, gave it like a 60 round magazine. And it's like, well, you're hunting dangerous game, my guys. Do you want to use like something bigger?
The only person whose gun made sense in that movie was the fucking guy with the 1301. That's
Yeah.
it. That guy's gun made sense. And I guess the 1911 as a backup that Chris Pratt carried also made sense because if the logic of hunting big scary thing, give me the biggest bullet I can fit in here.
Yeah,
Now,
give me
again, that
big,
being
heavy
said,
bullet.
I think now having shot a game that is roughly the size of those things, I would have had a 44 Magnum revolver as my backup, because that would have been awesome. But anyway, no, but I think the whole idea with, another show, that you mentioned earlier that did it well with keeping the guns grounded, but judging them up enough to look spacey was Battlestar, right? And, using the 5.7 as their pistol and putting that underbarrel grenade launcher attachment on there made it look sci-fi-y. Using the CX-4 Storm in the early seasons as their primary long gun worked because that gun already looks like it's sci-fi.
Yeah, it looks very sci-fi, it looks very slick. They were also a very accessible prop because they're not super expensive and they're easy to convert because they're pistol cal. So you could it was very cool, but you could also futurize it enough so that you're not sitting there and it's like, well, pistol caliber ballistics against a Cylon wouldn't work. It's like, yeah, it's not really pistol
We don't really
caliber.
care. It's
It's
a fucking
sci-fi.
space gun.
It's sci-fi caliber.
Speaking of, there's I owe someone an apology, and I would like to apologize to the guy who designed the Beretta 9000. Okay. Is that gun terrible? Yes, it is still a bad gun, but I called it ugly, and I have since changed my mind. That gun's not ugly. It's just very Beretta of the 90s, like if you guys go look up, because I had a Beretta 9000, and it's not a good gun. Like I need to be very clear with you guys, it's not a good gun. Okay, it was not reliable. Its grip is way too
Oh, I
wide,
remember this thing.
way too short. Like,
Its controls look like they suffer from what every small pistol just about universally has. The controls are just too stinking small.
it looks like someone tried to make a 92 compact out of plastic and then put it in the microwave and melted it. All
It
right.
does.
Like that's what it looks like. But I need to take back the mean things I said about its appearance because it's not that it's ugly. It's just a very specific design aesthetic that Beretta had for that very brief period of time. And because the CX-4 Storm is also a product of that design aesthetic, but the difference is the CX-4 Storm looks cool. And for whatever reason, that aesthetic on the 9000S never looked quite right. And I think, but and so what brought this up was I forget, I was on the internet or something. I was on the internet, but I saw someone had mocked up what it was like. I forget if it was either like an old leak, like Beretta had plans to like do the 9000 as like a full size or something like that. Either that or somebody not mocked it up a design. I don't remember. I don't know which. All right. But the 9000, it was a 9000S that had been upscaled to a full size gun the size of the 92, and it looked really good. And I was like, this looks cool. It looked very nice. It because then instead of looking squished, it looked right. It looked like the proportions were right. It had that 90s kind of like energy to it. And I'm like, okay, this looks better now, and it makes sense.
To give that, like, I think Beretta just continues to struggle with this to this day, because I'll even go so far as the modern APX series, the full size guns, the APX and APX A1, look pretty good. But when you get to the squishy guns, I hate them. When we get to the small ones, I know like.
I will say I also have been a big defender of One thing I liked about the APX A1 when they did the redesign was they redesigned the slide serrations, which
Yeah,
everybody.
they needed to, like.
Well, and here's the problem. Everybody but me hated those original slide serrations. I actually liked them. I liked them
Oh, they
for
were
two reasons.
certainly an interesting way to solve the issue, but
They
I
were
think the aesthetic was just too jarring.
highly functional. And like they were highly functional, and they didn't have the drawback, because sometimes you'll see highly functional slide serrations that will also chop your hand into bloody ribbons, right? And these did not. They were highly functional so that you could grasp, manipulate the slide forward of the ejection port. They worked great. They didn't chop your hand up. And to my eye, at least, I liked the aesthetic because they were very Italian and they made the gun stand out on the shelf from every other polymer frame striker fire 9mm, right? Now you go into a store and you know it, and if you like, if you're 10 meters back from the gun case and there's a 320, a P10, an APX A1, and a G3 in there,
That's five white-tailed deer for Americans.
yeah, exactly. You're like you're like, wait, which fucking one is, like, you can't tell until you get on top of them. And then even then you're like, wait, if you didn't know and you close your eyes and you grabbed a 320 and a Taurus G3 and a P10, and you were again with your eyes closed and someone was like, tell me which one of these is which, I think if you were, especially if you did, oh, in the fucking the Springfield Echelon, or
Yep.
that's what it's called, right? The Echelon,
Yeah,
that's
the
the
Echelon.
striker fired polymer frame 9mm duty gun.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
I've got one in the back. It's a gun. It
It's
works. It's fine.
and this again, where the hell's my carry gun? This brings me around to that thing that I've talked about a whole bunch, which is we are in the golden age of 9mm carry guns. This is the Taurus G3, guys. This is one of the, oh good, I didn't have a round in the chamber. This is one of the most affordable 9mm carry guns. This exact gun has 1700 rounds on it and just keeps going. And like at this point, I'm just like, what? Everybody makes a reliable 9mm. Hooray.
Yeah, you have to actively work not to. You have to work harder at not making it reliable by just
Speaking of,
ignore the formula and you'll fail at it. But like, why ignore formula? Why
right.
waste all that time and money and ignore the formula? It works, guys.
Done good. Hooray. Speaking of not reliable 9mm, and I think this is probably as good a topic as any to maybe play the drums out on. Fucking Sky's out of business. Do you hear about this?
Oh, yep.
Which I believe.
RIP, early 2000s drop gun of choice.
It was actually in a conversation about this that I learned that their brand was pronounced Sky and not SCCY.
Yes.
I honestly had no idea that it was pronounced Sky because my brain doesn't look at those letters in that order and come up with Sky. If anything, I get Sissy or Sakai
Yeah.
or yeah.
Well, along those lines, I had a do you use the navigation app Waze by any means?
I do not use Waze because I
But
have,
you've heard of it.
yes, of course. But I have grown up money, so I use Apple Maps like an
Yeah.
adult.
I had a friend who pronounced it Wazi, and I was like, that's a choice. All right. But so I do understand where you would get SCCY or not just say sky.
Right. Now I'll
Understand.
say this. You could be, was your friend perhaps pronouncing it Wazi ironically, like people would say Tarjay or something like that? Or was he
No,
just stupid?
was straight up seriously. No, put it in Wazi and come over here. And I'm like,
Yeah, I would have
what?
been like, excuse me? Put it in
And
what?
then I go, you mean Waze? And they're like, yeah, WAs. They're like, no, Wazi, Waze. And I'm like, ways, as in the ways to get to something. And they're like, oh,
Oh,
the
that
light bulb
light
goes
bulb
off.
moment. Yeah, Jesus. And other fun things. What are other fun things that we have going on? Yeah, so SCCY is out of business. For people who don't know, I have to give it, I have to get Sky, I have to give Sky credit. Those guns were actually entirely made in the United States.
Yeah.
And that's in some ways what led to their downfall, because it is difficult to you everyone should be familiar with the quality, timeliness, cost triangle, right? Like you can pick two points of this triangle and that's it. And the problem with the Sky is they couldn't make the gun at the price point that they were trying to make it at and keep any sort of quality in it. You know, you can make a gun in the United States that runs great and does everything that you want it to do, but it's hard to make that gun and sell it for $250. You know, it's difficult to do
Yeah,
that.
there's a reason that all the Striker Nines of today, it living in the golden age and following the formula, there's a reason those base guns all cost in the 350 to four range and roll to about the five range. All the base
And
guns are in that price range.
like the crazy thing is, like, even those guns, like for us at Taurus to be able, so like the Taurus G3 Tactical that I've got, right? So this gun is kind of our, you know, this is our entry into that world. The base gun MSRP is $500, right? And even to get it, which is on the afford, and do they street for that? No, they're street for much closer, like 350. But to get it to that number, we, like every other one of the big manufacturers, has to be tremendously vertically integrated, right? Like we make the vast majority of the parts in this gun ourselves, and they come from, oh, and this gun's also made in Brazil. I newsflash, it's cheaper to make guns in Brazil than it is in America.
Wild.
And if I made this gun in the United States, it would probably cost $250 more. Which I don't want to make it cost $750, because I want people to buy affordable 9 mils that cost $500. That's like, that's my
There's a
energy.
reason that most of the optics integration in the United States is manufactured in the Asian sector. They're designed here. We pick the feature, we say what we want it to do. It then goes to a factory in China or the Philippines or Japan, depending, pick your quality level. And then it comes back because even in the highest quality sense, sending it over to Japan, getting them to make it, QC it to their level, come back, get a final inspection here, and then sell, or at least make components, ship them here, build them, and sell them here. By keeping the manufacturing cost over there, we do keep these costs reasonable. Because if we were to do the scope manufacture completely in the United States, you're probably looking at close to $10,000 glass for some of our high-end stuff, for some of the stuff that people want.
Would you
You're
guys like to know why an RMR costs more than a HoloSun? It's because the RMR is basically entirely made in the United States.
Yep.
And,
That's why that thing has a $700 MSRP slapped on it. It is made in Michigan.
speaking of HoloSun, I posted the funniest meme yesterday, and I will pat myself on the back about it, but it was in response. It was the Snoop Dogg looking scared, and it's HoloSun owners realizing
I
that
saw that.
the Chi-Coms might
HoloSun owners
blow their
realizing
optics up
that.
now. Because this is what we're going to close with. We're going to talk about the Olight pager. I mean, the Hezbollah pager incident. Because,
Oh,
like,
Hezbollah.
when I read about this, I legitimately cackled, because that is the funniest. Like, first off, let's talk about how, in like, as a counterterrorism, espionage, military operation, pulling this off. Like, oh, and obviously, like, Mossad hasn't said that they actually did it, right? Okay, guys, we totally believe you that.
Yeah, but like they don't cop to anything, right? That's
Yeah,
one of
right.
the CIA cops to things after 50 years, like
Yeah,
statute of limitations, CIA will
Mossad
cop
still
to it.
claims that they didn't kill a bunch of Nazis after World War II. They're like, what
But
Nazis? They just fell down. It was the damnedest thing onto bullets. So strange.
so
But no,
strange that all these pagers just oopsed and
right.
they
So,
happen to be the enemies of
well,
Israel.
and what's even crazier is, so strange that all these pagers just oopsie doodled, that there was no collateral damage to, like, because they didn't, like, somehow they managed to not get the explodey pagers mixed in with pagers that go to like doctors in Lebanon, right? So like no collateral, they complete, but think about this. They had to not just
Yeah, the collateral damage on this type of attack being as absolutely minimal as it was insane.
amazing.
Oh, and they did it again with radios.
I know. And they had to, so they had to completely penetrate Hezbollah's supply chain. They had to insert whatever explosive device into these that was designed in such a way that it would not make the device not feel right, right? Like if you put a bomb in a thing, a lot of times it feels like a bomb with a thing around it.
Because you drastically changed the mass of
Yeah.
the thing.
So they managed to infiltrate the supply chain, put the explosives in there in an unobtrusive way, distribute them only to legitimate targets, simultaneously detonate them. Any one of those four things by itself is a massive intelligence, counterintelligence operation. To successfully pull all four of them off, it's completely insane. It's the funniest shit ever. Fuck Hezbollah and terrorists in general.
Boom.
Like, can you imagine, you're like, oh, I'm going to get a page from Hamad and he's going to tell me, where to go to pick up the guns that I need to smuggle over to Gaza, and then your dick blows off. Fantastic. I cannot. It's so great. It's so great. And yes, guys, I am a tool of the Zionist deep state. Just
Paid Brazilians of dollars.
Yes, I'm paid by the Brazilians to be a tool of the Zionist deep state, guys, because that totally makes sense. Now that being said, IWI, if you wanted to run a truckload of money over to my house, I would be a tool of the Zionist deep
No,
state. Like,
that's mine. I'm the actual tool of the Zionists.
I will take back every mean thing I said about bull pups if you guys want to pay me to be a tool of the Zionist deep state, and also start making the 9 mil again. I know we. ATF.
Curse you, ATF, tech
ATF.
branch. Curse you, Fat D, which is actually the name of the tech branch in the
I
ATF.
know, it's
I
great.
love
We have a and we have a
it.
friend that works for
Curse you,
Fat
Fat
D.
D.
We have a chick friend who works for Fat
We have a friend
D.
who works for Fat D.
And I will occasionally text her and be like, hey, how's your Fat D? And she just never texts me back. That being said, that is it for this week, guys. It's nice to get back and get one in the can. We're going to try to get at least one of these out a month for the duration of my Air Force activation. For the people that know and have reached out to me and told me to be safe, I assure you that I will do no such thing, and I will volunteer for every dangerous detail I possibly can, because Air Force deployments are frequently quite boring. So,
The greatest risk is I have been on this post for 32 days. I have done nothing.
My biggest risk is catching a sunburn by the pool. So, we're gonna try to
Try
mitigate
to
that
do at
risk.
least something mildly entertaining.
Yeah.
Talk to Mark. He managed to do funny things.
Yeah. I mean, I did fun stuff on my last one. It was mostly because they were like, hey, we have this really dumb idea. Does anybody want to volunteer for it? I'm like, yes, I would like to volunteer for it.
Dumb and entertaining?
Dumb and entertaining, and I don't have to be within the confines of this installation, and I'm kind of out on my own doing my own thing with my partner, which is how
I'm
I
in.
was driving around northern Kuwait and maybe into southern Iraq in an unarmored Hilux with a 249 looking for suspicious vehicles. It's fun. Good times. All right, guys, that is it for this week. We will be back at some point with another episode. Thank you everyone for watching, liking, sharing, and subscribing, for sticking with the show. For those of you that have contacted me asking if the show is dead, clearly it is not dead.
It's
We're still
not.
alive, assholes, and we're going to keep making more episodes.